All right, everybody, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 24, our exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. We appreciate you joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. My name is Alex Dorio. I am one of your co-hosts for this podcast experience, one of the creatures of the night, and I am joined by my fellow creature, my tag team partner, Travis White. And Travis, man, I've been having issues, man. I've been trying to call the WWF Superstar line at 1-900-737-4WWF. I've been trying to find out what happened between Mankind and The Undertaker, but I'm just getting busy signals, man. Have you had any luck calling the Superstar line, trying to get this info?
I've been actually trying to call 1-900-909-9900 to see if Mean Gene could let me know what's going on, and see if WCW had a scoop, so...
That's such a better number. WCW lucked out there. They had the more memorable hotline number there.
Oh, yeah, I remembered it. Not from listening to anything, I just remembered it off the top of my head. 1-900-909-9900. Get your parents' permission. Did they ask? I'm sorry, little boy, do you have your parents' permission? Yes, sir. Okay, great. Like, how do they know?
I think they did ask, yeah. Because I didn't call that one. I called another one. There was like a local one that was in the... In the Augusta newspaper or something like that. It was like a local one that would have news and info on there. But man, I will go to the grave memorizing the WCW hotline number. I'll never forget that for the rest of my life. Yep. I'm sure there's many fans out there just like us that will always remember that.
I hope so.
And that's who this podcast is for. So we appreciate you listening and joining us for this next episode as we continue on this exploration. Through one superstar's career, one pay-per-view match at a time. And, you know, we've been talking, of course, we're talking about The Undertaker. We're talking about his matches, everything he's done in his career, trying to sum it all up here. But really, we're also using this as a springboard to talk about the wrestling industry, the business in general, the changes, the evolution of it over 25, 26, 27 years. And, you know, you brought this up towards the tail end of our last episode as we covered King of the Ring 96, but thought we could just spend a few minutes on it because this pay-per-view we're covering right now is the In Your House International Incident from July 1996 for the WWF. And the main event for this show is a six-man tag match with British Bulldog, Owen Hart, and Vader, Camp Cornette against Shawn Michaels, Ahmed Johnson, and Psycho Sid. Across the way in WCW, at the same month, July 1996, they also have a pay-per-view with a six-man tag main event, except this is Bash at the Beach 1996, and the main event is Sting, Macho Man, and Lex Luger against Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and eventually Hulk Hogan against the NWO in their debut. So I don't know any other way that you could explain the state of the business right there when you've got the beginnings of the NWO on the WCW side, and then you just have this pretty much absolutely meaningless pay-per-view on the WWF side. It just shows you where the business is at this time and place. I mean, what do you think of that juxtaposition right there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get, so that's what, 12 guys? You got a dozen guys, and on the WCW side, every one of those guys are absolute legends. I mean, say what you will about some of them and their personal choices, but in the wrestling business, they're all legends and probably Hall of Famers. I guess the only one that isn't is what, Lex?
Yeah.
Luger?
Yeah.
Everybody else in that match is a Hall of Famer so far. He probably will be one day. And then on the WWF side, you got, you know, they're trying with some younger superstars and some young talent, and also older talent like Sid. You know, he'd been around earlier, and Vader, but yeah, it's different, man. But again, the WWF can only go up from here, you know. So they got that as their main event. They got cartoon characters like T.L. Hopper and a wrestler named Who. His name is Who.
Exactly.
It's just like, are you serious? But then the WCW has the New World Order, you know, and things are getting real. It's realism, realistic. Everybody has their first and their last name. There's no gimmicks anymore, even except for, like, Sting. But other than that, even he's becoming more real, you know. Right. So, I don't know. It's different, man.
Yeah, the WWF is just coasting right now, and the and WCW is putting on one of the most memorable storylines and angles and moments of all time in the same month. And this international incident, I'd never seen this pay-per-view before, and I remember...
Me neither.
Yeah, even back then when I was watching it for the first time in 1996, it just felt like a meh kind of pay-per-view. It's just there. It's the WWF Championship's not on the line. You've got the six-man tag. And really, the story of this match, to go back to what we're covering, we've got Undertaker going back to facing Goldust after having this really vicious match with Mankind. I mean, that's the feud everyone cares about, is Undertaker versus Mankind. Yeah. And now all of a sudden, that feud's just been dropped, and we're flip-flopping back and forth to this Goldust feud. It's really weird, and it just feels like WWF is coasting and also just doesn't really know what they're trying to do at this moment. And, I mean, this matchup that we're going to see, and including the build-up to it, just kind of epitomizes that in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, this NWO angle had been building for a little bit, you know, a couple months there. But it was, you know, it had the wrestling world talking back in 96, you know, because some people thought it was real, man. Like, in fact, they went to court over it, you know, they got sued. And then, you know, I mean, it became legit. And then WWF brought in fake Diesel and fake Razor and stuff. So, but it got real. Yeah, and like you said, WWF's just kind of coasting, using weird gimmicks like Who and TL Hopper and Duke, the Dumpster, and all this stuff. And also, I think their taping schedule, we've been watching some of these Raws and stuff. You got four weeks of shows taped on the same night. So that crowd, by the, you know, the fourth week in June that you see on Raw, well, it was taped 4 weeks ago. And the crowd is definitely way less hot, and the entertainers or the performers are sometimes not putting their best foot forward. And you can't blame them, though. And it seems like they don't really have their priorities straight yet. And I think WCW, NWO kicked it into high gear and made Vince fight from behind. And we'll see how 97 goes, because 97 is a great year for the WWF. But
yeah, and it'll get better for sure. But, I mean, you talk about thinking it was real. Man, I wasn't even thinking about this, but you mentioned it. I remember I watched the Bash of the Beach 96 live at my Aunt Kathy's house, who I mentioned a few episodes ago. I was on vacation in Tennessee. We were staying with her, and she was a wrestling fan at one point in the old NWA days. So got that pay-per-view because I had to see who was going to be the third man in the NWO. And it ended up being Hulk Hogan. And at that time, growing up, Hulk Hogan is what got me into wrestling. So he was my favorite wrestler. I still had, in 1996, I still had a Hulk Hogan poster on my wall. But when he came out and he leg dropped the Macho Man and turned and joined the NWO, told the fans to stick it on that promo, I had tears in my eyes as a 10-year-old kid seeing Hulk Hogan do that. When I got home, I tore down my Hulk Hogan poster. I threw it under my bed. I had a Hulk Hogan VHS tape, and I got it out, and I threw it under my bed. I didn't want anything to do with Hulk Hogan anymore. So you talk about thinking it was real, man. It was real to me back then. My heart was broken to see Hulk Hogan that.
And that is exactly what they wanted to do, and that is perfect. People talk about great heels, man. Hulk Hogan was one of the best heels there was because he was such a good babyface. So when he turned, it made 10-year-old Alex – or excuse me, the Big D, 10-year-old Big D – rip his poster off the wall, man. That's great stuff.
And then I had an NWO shirt like a year later. So,
yep, yeah, you did. Yeah.
You couldn't help but enjoy them. So,
yep,
yeah.
I can't wait to talk about the build of this match, because it literally one night on Raw, it just gets announced. We're having this match at International Instant. So I think that Vince McMahon just had like this pay per view slotted in the calendar, you know, and then he was like, oh, well, what can we do? Oh, we'll just do this, like, because they just announced Goldust versus Undertaker, and we'll talk about it in just a second when we get to that Raw. But it feel like they're not, maybe he doesn't see how hard he has to try, maybe he doesn't see WCW as competition yet, because again, on Raw he's still doing the stupid billionaire Ted skits and stuff, so kind of making a joke out of it. But once the NWO turns up, man, everything gets real. So
well, you talk about not not knowing what you got or throwing things out there, the buildup for this begins with, can you believe this, for the first time ever on Raw, on June 24th, 1996, the main event is Undertaker versus the winner of the King of the Ring from the night before, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Man, what a glimpse into the future that is. What did you think about this for their first ever meeting, as far as I know, as far as I've seen?
Yeah, as far as I could find online, this was their first meeting. I mean, I thought it was good. Like, did you watch the whole match? I did. It was great.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I just watched they have a match like 2 months later in the build-up to SummerSlam on Raw, and that match is amazing. Like, it's awesome. Yes. And it's, like, way better than this one. So this one was okay.
Yeah, this was cool.
But it's cool to see.
It's cool to see, and it's cool to see Austin still kind of working that Stunned Steve style.
Yes.
You know, because when we eventually get to, you know, Undertaker and the real Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know.
Knee braces, just moving around like.
And he's got he's got the logo on his tights too, doesn't he? The Stone Cold logo?
That's in the next one. The one later on.
I couldn't remember, yeah. But it's just, it's cool. It's cool to see. So, yeah, really epic, you know, glimpse into the future there.
Yeah, and the build for this matchup that we're getting to with Goldust begins right here because before the match begins, Jerry Lawler, that being the heel announcer that he is talking about what happened at King of the Ring the night before. Just to recap, of course, Mankind ended up beating Undertaker because Paul Bearer accidentally hit The Undertaker with the urn on the outside, but Jerry Lawler thinks the same thing that Owen Hart thought the night before, that Paul Bearer might have done it on purpose, that maybe he was had some grudge with The Undertaker, he's frustrated with him for some reason, so he's being a heel, talking it up, like, oh, Paul Bearer's turned on The Undertaker, he doesn't trust him anymore, he's trying to get out of this partnership that they have. So Jerry Lawler gets in the ring and tries to pester Paul Bearer, tries to stir up dissension in the ranks between those two, but Paul Bearer refuses to speak to him. He is hiding. He's embarrassed, or he doesn't want to speak to Jerry Lawler. So, you know, the mystery is still there in the fans' eyes.
Hey, listen, I want to ask you a couple of questions. What happened to you last night, Paul Bearer? Huh? Did you drink a little too much formaldehyde or something? Was your aim a little off? Come on, tell the people what happened. You're looking, you must be proud of what you did. Your face looks a little ashen. Come on, tell me.
If the Undertaker sees what's going on behind him, he's going to come right after the King.
Come on, look right in there and tell us exactly what happened. Huh? What's in that urn anyway, huh? Folgers, crystals or something? Come on, there it is right there. Speak to me.
And obviously, Paul Bearer feels badly enough.
Yeah, and I liked it. It kind of came out of nowhere, you know, at King of the Ring. You know, and now, because, again, we take for granted they're going to be together, and that's his boy, and, you know, he's kind of the caretaker of The Undertaker. And, yeah, it comes out of left field. You know, even just watching the King of the Ring match, if you take away the commentary, you just think, oh, he accidentally hit him. You know, it was a botch, you know, whatever. But then, once you know, like, we know in hindsight where this is headed, but, you know, watching it at the time, I'm sure it's just kind of like, well, I wasn't thinking that, but hey, maybe there is something to it. So it's kind of cool. And Lawler is always great to hear him be the stir up crap.
He's a master of that. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, this Undertaker and Steve Austin match, and then like during the contest, Vince McMahon just announces, oh yeah, in your house in British Columbia, International Incident, it will be Goldust versus The Undertaker. That's it. I mean, that's the build-up. It just announces the match. Yeah. It's basically a house show, you know, they're just going to put on pay-per-view.
That is what it feels like. And then I think Goldust comes out in this one. Like,
yeah.
Goldust comes out. I don't know about that.
Oh. he comes out for commentary during the,
that's
the
end what
of the
I
match. Like, with like 2 minutes left of the match. But he does hit something cool here. He said that the upcoming match between he and Undertaker will be their sequel, which, you know, going with his Gold Dust, you know, his Academy Awards, all his movie puns and stuff. And
of course.
I thought that was kind of neat. You know?
Yes.
So, he gets involved at the end there.
He does. Taker goes for the tombstone on Stone Cold, and then Gold Dust throws some gold dust into the Undertaker's eyes, which I really enjoyed. I don't know why he didn't do more of that. I wish he'd have kept that as his gimmick, throwing gold dust at people. And the commentary's putting it over that Paul Bearer really let the Undertaker down again, that he didn't like protect him from gold dust on the outside. And all the while, Paul Bearer's still being like really shifty around the ring, like acting all weird. And Jerry Lawler tries to confront them again, but the Undertaker goes after Jerry Lawler, like he's going to attack him for even bringing up those sort of questions. And that's how Raw goes off the air right there, with the mystery of what in the world is going on between these two. Why is this partnership that we've seen for the past 6 years the strongest force in the WWF? What is going on here? Is this the end of their partnership? So a lot of tension being built up between Undertaker and Paul Bearer is the bigger story, maybe, than Undertaker and Goldust.
Right. Yeah, and I got to give Vince McMahon credit here for the writing of this, because, again, we talk a lot about and joke about how he's not a very subtle person. He puts it right out there in front of your face. But I will say there's a lot of subtlety to this, because, again, look at somebody, you know, there's been, what, 14 tag teams break up in WWF this past year, or WWE?
Yes.
And you could all see them coming, basically. But in, like, even, you know, Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens, you knew they're going to break up, and you could kind of see the seeds being planted. There were no seeds planted until that King of the Ring match, you know? And so, again, it's just one of those things you take for granted they're going to be together forever, you know? They're like, you know, a married couple till death do us part, or I guess re-death do us part.
Oh,
I don't know.
There you go.
I'll try to make some kind of a Undertaker pun. Didn't work. Anyway, but, you know, I just feel like they're, you know, it's almost like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, like, they're, you know, they're being very subtle about it here, though. You know, they're not really pouring it on our faces and making all these backstage things, or, you know, it's not, I don't know, it's done very well, I'll say.
It is done very well. That part is, but this Undertaker Goldust feud is not really much of anything here. The next week, there's a Goldust match. He faces Mark Miro, but, I mean, there's almost no mention of this match with Undertaker at all this whole time.
Yeah.
It's really more about a feud with Marlena and Sable. Like, Marlena's flirting with Sable, and that's what this whole match is about, more than Goldust Undertaker. But I just thought it was pretty interesting that you've got on Raw Johnny B. Bad versus Dustin Rhodes in 1990s. Like, a year earlier, that's what that match would have been, and now it's Goldust.
Yep.
Versus Mark Miro. And, you know, as a kid, it took me a long time to realize that Goldust was Dustin Rhodes. Like when he first came to the WWF, I saw it in a Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine and, like, put that together. I was like, oh, like, it's just, I didn't watch WCW as much. I knew Dustin Rhodes, but I just didn't put that together. That's who that was. I don't know. I didn't feel like that with Mankind either. I didn't realize that was Cactus Jack for a while either. I don't know. Just one of those things before you had the internet to understand all that sort of stuff.
To spoil everything for you. You know, why did they never use Goldust Woman as like a Goldust song? That's a Fleetwood Mac song, Goldust Woman. That's a great song. They never used it like with him at all. I guess it's too many rights fees.
Well, Vince McMahon only likes AC/DC.
Yeah,
I think
that's... And Alter Bridge.
Not a Fleetwood Mac fan.
No.
Anyway. Speaking of music videos, as to
great segue.
Raw on July 15th. There's absolutely nothing on July 8th at all.
I was going to say nothing on July 15th. Yes, there is. The Raw debut of T.L. Hopper.
Oh, excuse me.
On July 15th.
That's the big focus.
And then, that's the big focus of July 15th. But immediately after that is one of the best music videos I've ever seen. Please talk about it.
Well, it's just the middle of the show, and Mr. Man's like, all right, we're going to show you this great Undertaker music video. like it's on MTV in 1984 or something like that. And they show a video that is the Undertaker's theme music. It's a little bit remixed, kind of sounds like his 1998 version a little bit in there as well. And it's clips of his career. Then all of a sudden in the middle of it, the music breaks down and there's clips of Mankind beating up the Undertaker. Then we go back to the regular video and showing kind of some modern clips of him dominating the last couple months. Then the music slows down again, and it's black and white footage of Goldust beating up on Undertaker. Then we go back to just like Undertaker clips throughout his career. They show a lot of him like building caskets and things like that.
Yeah.
And then
it's all stuff we've talked about
the show. For sure.
And the iconic thing with the vulture, and it even has him and Steve Austin from the week or the month before. It has a chokeslam on Steve Austin in that.
And it has the music video, like the titles at the end of it with Jim Johnston's name on there. Yep. So I don't know if they're trying to win a video music award or something like that. I don't know what this was all about, but that's how they decided to build this matchup.
Yeah, that's it. And, man, it was strange. But I don't know. Now, I was reading somewhere, doing a little research, too, seeing, like, just why was that in here? And I can't confirm this, but I think during this Raw taping was when the Ultimate Warrior left, because he was at King of the Ring with Lawler. And I think they taped some stuff with him on this set of Raw tapings, but then he, like, had that contract dispute and left. So what someone was surmising online was that possibly they just interjected this in there because it was an Ultimate Warrior segment. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's a good little theory. I mean, it makes sense because I know there was some stuff filmed with Warrior during this Raw taping, so that could be it. Anyway, we got a great music video. So I'd encourage everyone to go watch it. It's awesome. Not really, but kind
of. That actually makes a lot of sense. That would explain why that's just thrown in there randomly all of a sudden.
Yeah, because it's not like the Triple H like coming back from 9 months off, or you know, all those videos they used to show in the early 2000s. Right. You know,
this is not how you typically build up feuds.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, here's a great video from the Undertaker. So I don't know, but it was, you know, the MTV generation, that era. So
I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a lot more than. Did you see these building up? Watching these Raws, did you see the ads for the house shows that they would show on these Raws? The Attitude
Holy
Adjustment
crap.
Tour?
Yeah.
Feel it.
All in the WWF. Can you see this?
Touch it.
This building has exploded.
Live it live.
As the World Wrestling Federation's Attitude Adjustment Tour sends jolts of excitement through an arena near you.
Yeah. So bad.
With like the guys. Like, this is their image of a WWF fan back then. This guy with his eyes rolling in the back of his head, going cross-eyed, being electrocuted in the middle of a ring. Like, that was the logo that they showed. Like, the dorkiest guy ever. That's what they thought of their fans back then.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Ugh. Terrible, man. Terrible.
But, yeah, I mean, that's all we got as we go into International Incident.
Sorry, guys.
That's it. That's okay.
Now, did you think... Okay, the beginning of International Incident, the actual logo for it, did it remind you of WWE Confidential?
Oh, I didn't think about that, but it does.
Like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, man, it reminds me of Confidential. That was a great little show. I enjoyed that show.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that, too.
Come back.
That was a precursor to a lot of stuff that we see on the WWE Network in a lot of ways.
I know.
Yeah.
It sure was. But when I saw it, I mean, you know, started the pay-per-view, and I always like to watch the beginning is to see who the commentators are and how it starts and stuff. And even though I don't watch the whole show, but it just – the logo came on. I was like, man, it reminds me of WWE Confidential. So anyway, on commentary, we got Vince, Jerry Lawler, and good old JR. So pretty cool.
Yeah, kind of a classic commentary team there. JR says as this match is beginning that a lot of mind games have been played between these two as of late. And I just was like, no. They've done almost nothing to build this feud up. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're just making that up, JR. But I appreciate it. He's trying to get people into it. And, yeah, like I said, this is
the semi-main, right? It's the next to last match, I think.
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah.
And I think we both already mentioned this is the first time either of us have ever seen this match. I used to watch every WWF pay-per-view, but for some reason, I don't think I ever saw International Incident. So this was a first time for me. And Undertaker's coming off his first two-match pay-per-view losing streak of his career. So this is big for him, trying to regain momentum. I just wrote down a couple great lines on commentary that I think Jim Ross said, as Undertaker is walking out.
And the judge from Transylvania gives the Undertaker a perfect 10.
Which you mentioned. Undertaker should get a perfect 10 for all his acrobatic moves, and JR agrees with you, man.
I know. He does, yeah. The judge from Transylvania. I heard that, too, and I was like, what is he talking about? So, I just, was there, oh.
He's from Death Valley. He's not from Transylvania.
Also, the Olympics were in Atlanta this year,
they were going on at the same time, yeah. That's probably why.
Yeah, okay. That's probably it. All right. There you go. Good on you, JR. But I do want to mention, like, this Canadian crowd loves The Undertaker. When his music hits, they go nuts. I haven't seen an ovation like this in a while. Like, I don't know how many folks were at this show. Probably a couple, 4,000 or 6,000. I don't think it was a big event. But, man, they go crazy. I always love shows in Canada because it's like a strange place to have WWF shows. You never know how they're going to react or who they're going to pop for. Sometimes they hate the good guys and love the bad guys. But here, man, they are all for The Undertaker.
Well, yeah,
it's really
cool
to see.
And I think back then they were more starved for shows. Like, they didn't come to them maybe quite as often, so they were really into it. But, is Vancouver, British Columbia, is that really, like, an international incident? Like, are we really calling that?
Yeah, you could throw a rock to Seattle from there. Yeah. Could have been in Seattle like an hour before and walked across. So.
Yeah. They were really reaching for that pay-per-view name, I feel like.
Yeah. Again, they just had it booked probably, and they're like, oh, we've got to do the In Your House. We'll just call it international.
International incident, pal.
Yeah. Exactly.
But before the match
starts, they've probably got some tax breaks from filming there. Like, every show on television films in Vancouver now.
So. That's true. Before the match starts, I want to say one thing that Jerry Lawler said. I got to throw my favorite Jerry Lawler lines in there. As Paul Bearer's carrying the urn to the ring, he says,
"Whose ashes do you think are in that urn? I don't know, King. I know one thing. I hope they never cremate Jake the Snake Roberts. That burned for 4 days, wouldn't it?"
What does that mean?
Because his whole feud with Jake Roberts is based on Jake Roberts being an alcoholic. So he's just saying he's so full of alcohol.
Dude,
they cremated him and it burned for 4 days.
That. I completely miss that. Oh man, I'm so stupid. Yeah, now it makes perfect sense. And how mean.
Really?
That's
really
like saying
bad.
Paul Bearer's blood was ragu.
Jerry Law didn't hold back, man.
No, he's got absolutely no filter. Oh, what a horrible thing to say to someone.
That sets
great.
The tone
all
right
there. I love that. I love that now. That's so awful. But yeah, so Undertaker comes out, and JR discusses how it's been tough times. Like you said, he's on a two-match losing streak, and Goldust in the ring, and he's standing on the outside at this point. And he is apprehensive to get into the ring. I'd like to mention that he's apprehensive because the commentary continues to mention how he's apprehensive to get into the ring. Goldust is. He's very apprehensive to get in the ring. Did you notice how apprehensive he was?
Yeah, talk about subtlety.
Exactly. That's the opposite of what I was talking about when it comes to the cracks in The Undertaker and Paul Bearer's relationship. They throw the word apprehensive, seriously, probably 6 times in like 80 seconds. It's ridiculous. So,
well, they have to keep talking about it because they stall for about 5 minutes here at the beginning of this match. So they got to find something to talk about.
Yeah, but I do want to say this again. I know that we talk about Undertaker's character, and he stares a hole through Goldust. He does not take his eyes off of him. Again, it kind of reminded me of like the very first several matches we watched when he was like that. You know, he kind of just would stare a hole through people and never break character. And again, we've mentioned in the last several podcasts how he's becoming more human. But here in the beginning of this match, it made me feel like an old school Undertaker, just the way he was just staring down Goldust, who was, again, apprehensive to get into the ring. So,
yes. He's doing everything he can to get out of it. He uses the referee as like a shield as he goes into the ring.
DQ.
Should have been.
Why is it not a DQ?
Should have been.
He touched the referee.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's rubbing himself up and down. He tries to leave with Marlena, just stalling and stalling and stalling. But eventually he Goldust pulls Undertaker out of the ring, but Undertaker chops him down and then just starts the match. He sort of like almost chokeslams him straight onto the steps.
Goldust lands on his butt, and it hurt me. Like, it hurt my spine watching that because I was like, man, that had to hurt, you know?
Well, Jerry Lawler said
Steve Austin talk about nowadays, like how taking this bump from the stunner on his tailbone probably shortened his career, and taking a chokeslam on your butt on the stairs probably shortened Goldust's career. But it's 2018, and he's on 205 Live, baby.
He's still hanging in. But the King noted that was just like the movie Spinal Tap when he landed on his spine.
He has a lot of movie puns.
Oh man, I felt like he just had a list of movie puns like written on the table, and he was just going through them, like checking them off.
Yeah.
He must have wrote them down like the day before. He's like, I gotta throw this in. I gotta throw this in if I can.
I mean, he turns the puns up to 11.
That's great.
Just a little Spinal Tap for you. But lands on his butt, and then Undertaker slams his head to the stairs, and he goes to smash Goldust on the outside, but Marlena gets in the way. Such a great heel manager move.
Yeah.
You know, the damsel in distress. He's not going to hurt Marlena, he does have a heart, Undertaker.
Somewhere in there.
I don't know. Something in there. That's the old muscle. But she gets in the way. And just a great heel move, But then they get back in the ring, and he's choking, he being Undertaker, is choking Goldust in the corner. And as he's doing this and kind of, stalking the referee away, because, again, I love that Undertaker has not lost that. He's still, when the referee gets to four, Undertaker stares him down and stalks him halfway across the ring. Every match, I love it. But as he's doing that, Goldust is trying to take off the turnbuckle pad, untie it and everything, and, then I think it's a clothesline and a leg drop, and at this point, it's all Undertaker.
Talk about a great heel maneuver, untying the turnbuckle in there, and we just don't see that sort of stuff anymore. It's just classic. He's going to – and it's just good storytelling in wrestling, because most of the time you untie it and then you don't quite get to use it, and it's just sitting there. You know it's going to get used. You're just waiting for it. The tension's building for when is that turnbuckle going to come into play. Undertaker takes over, and King throws in that he needs to see his physician, Dr. Strangelove. Just continuing to amp up the movie puns for Goldust. It's fantastic. Goldust gets a thumb to the eye, tries to throw some offense in there.
He gets a thumb to the facial area.
Excuse me.
Vince McMahon says.
Excuse me.
What's a facial area? He said, thumb to the facial area. I just wrote, no, Vince, it's his eye. It wasn't the facial area. It was his eye. I don't know why Vince McMahon says these things sometimes.
His McMahonisms.
Some of those things drive me crazy. I don't know. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
I don't understand it either. That he is able to wear down the facial area. But Undertaker takes back over, and we go into all his greatest hits, the old school rope walk, big body slam. We get the RIP chant from the crowd. It is really, really loud.
Undertaker rings. These idiots are stolen. Rest in peace.
Yes, they are.
What's this agility?
He gets the perfect 10 landing on the outside, and then his little rope stunner on the apron.
Oh yeah, I love that. Yeah,
that's
the apron
a great
stunner
move.
So good.
But then Goldust is able to turn the tide by using that exposed turnbuckle to finally take over. And so he takes control, gets the stairs, and slams the stairs on top of Undertaker, and locks in a camel clutch. Pretty lazy camel clutch, but he gets it locked in there.
Yeah. I guess Jimmy Corderas, I think he was the referee at this point, and going bald even at 28 years old or however old he is at this point. He's super baldy, but I think it was Jimmy Corderas. But yeah, when he hits Undertaker in the back with the steps on the outside, I don't know where the referee was. I can't remember if he was distracted by Marlena or Paul Bearer. I don't think that the production crew got a shot of the referee, so I was wondering that. But yeah, the camel clutch, man, for that's a big move, a big guy move, in my opinion.
Right.
Kind of
weird for
Sheik
Goldust.
Or even Big Papa Pump, he's a big, muscular dude. It's kind of weird for Goldust. But he's been working on his back, His back got
That's
hit
true.
By the turnbuckle, pat, or the exposed turnbuckle, and then he hit him with the stairs. So, psychology-wise, it makes sense. But, yeah, it does seem like a lazy move for Goldust. He's just taking a rest hold.
It doesn't last for long. Undertaker's able to fight out of it, get a big boot. And then we get the highlight of the match for me. Undertaker goes for Tombstone, and Goldust sort of slides out of it and fights out of it, like, awkwardly. And so all of a sudden, the Undertaker busts out of his arsenal a small package of all things. And I literally laughed out loud when I saw the Undertaker get a small package for two. This was fantastic.
I laugh just like I am right now, man. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe my eyes. I don't think JR could either. Did you write down his quote? He said something like, well, we haven't seen him do that move before.
Yeah.
But he's like, he did with the inside cradle or whatever. But, yeah, I guess you think he just went for the Tombstone, like, too early? Because the end is coming right here. But you think he went for it too early or something? Or
I don't know.
It did not look planned.
I don't know if he went for it too early or if Goldust was not supposed to reverse out of it, because they roll right into the finish right after that. They go right back, and he does a clothesline and then another Tombstone, hits the Tombstone right after that. So somebody screwed up. I couldn't tell if it was Undertaker or Goldust, but it was really weird. But, I mean, kudos to Taker for thinking on his feet and keeping the match going.
Oh, yeah.
But who knew that he knew had the small package in his arsenal?
I mean, this is episode 24, right? And that is the first time we've seen that. We've gone on with 6 years in his career as the Undertaker. So, yeah.
For all I know, we may never see him do it again either.
I hope not. I hope it's one time only, man.
Me too. But, why don't you take the ending right there as we roll into it?
Oh, yeah. So, again, they go that inside cradle and gets a two, and he goes after that. He gets up and just does the running, diving clothesline and then hits the actual Tombstone. And then he goes for the pin. Very slow pin. He crosses his arms, and you can see, if you look now, Jimmy Corderas is looking out of the corner of his eye like something's going to happen, you know? So he goes to count one, and he goes to count two, and then Mankind comes up through the ring in the bottom corner, and he grabs Undertaker's leg and, you know, breaks the three count up, so Undertaker does not get the pinfall, and then he hooks in the mandible claw and drags Undertaker down into the ring. Which we've seen him do to
Diesel.
Diesel, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so really cool. Again, mind games. Mankind's using Undertaker's own gimmick against him. Comes out again. Got him with that mandible claw again. This is the fourth or fifth time now.
Yes.
Yeah. Takes him down below the ring. Then he comes out of the ring and the smoke billows out of the hole. And then the gong hits. The lights flash. And Paul Bearer's kind of looking around like, what's going on? And Mankind, like, gets down on all fours, and he's looking in the hole, like, you know, eyeballing around, and sticks his head down there. So,
like, he doesn't know what's going on either. And the announcers are saying, we may have seen the last of the Undertaker. That was it right there.
Yeah.
Even though, like you said, they couldn't quite get the timing right when it first happened. Like, the ref is stalled. Undertaker doesn't go for the pin for a really long time on Gold. They're waiting on Mankind to pop up, and he just barely makes it out to drag Undertaker down before the three count. So Undertaker officially wins by disqualification there.
Right.
Mankind is searching for Undertaker. The smoke is billowing out. The crowd is chanting, rest in peace. When all of a sudden,
they're into it.
They're into it, yeah. All of a sudden, Undertaker pops up out the opposite side of the ring, and that gets a huge pop from the crowd. And finally, after, I guess, 3 months now since April, finally, The Undertaker is getting some revenge and getting one up on Mankind. Mankind has dominated this whole feud, and finally, Undertaker is getting some. And he, like, unloads on Mankind. They fight all the way to the back, and the crowd is going nuts for it to finally see The Undertaker get a little bit of heat back from this feud that Mankind has just been dominating. It's perfect. It's really well done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just throw this lots of aggression. Again, like you mentioned, they're matching King of the Ring. You know, it's just he turned it up to a different level. Like, to use Final Tap, he turned it up to 11, man. Turned it up to 11. He's just going nuts, and he just beating him up, and so much aggression. Again, like you said, it's been 3 or 4 months here of never getting the upper hand, and he finally gets a chance to. And, yeah, they fight to the back, and commentary table talks about, you know, what's going on, and we cut back to the back and we see Undertaker and Mankind are battling in a boiler room.
Yep.
Which is a little bit of foreshadowing to what's to come, but they're like, well, that's some kind of a boiler room or something. Again, that's not a term you hear very often, but they really got to put that word over. But yeah, they're battling in the boiler room, and that's kind of how this particular part ends. And then we go on to the main event of the show, which is that six-man tag, and there's no resolution to the Undertaker Mankind until afterward. There's a extra. Now I wonder, was the extra, the International Incident extra, was it on the actual pay-per-view or just on the home video?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. I don't remember.
But anyway, it's in the back, and you got Doc Hendricks interviewing Gorilla Monsoon, and he says that it's going to be the Undertaker versus Mankind at SummerSlam, in a match that they'll start in a boiler room. That's all we have.
That's it.
We just know they're going to begin the match in a boiler room. So I wonder if they hadn't quite got the logistics worked out of the what exactly a boiler room brawl is, but they're just like, they're going to begin the match in the boiler room. So, you know?
Yeah, that's all we know so far. Kudos to Gorilla Monsoon. He's on the ball. He's making matches already, man. He's a wheeler and dealer, making moves.
Oh, yeah.
but the feud is going to continue. We're going to see Undertaker and Mankind for the second time at SummerSlam. We're going to see this feud come to a head, possibly, or just reach another crescendo in it, I guess. I don't know what you want to say, but very exciting, very intense. The match with Goldust and Undertaker kind of sucked. Nothing special there, but great angle to close things out, playing on what Undertaker had done with Diesel back in February, and then playing on Undertaker and Mankind's feud. So a lot of great storytelling in there. And just one other quick highlight in there, when they go to the back and then they cut back to the announcers, they're selling it real big, trying to figure out what's going on. And as they're talking, a fan in the crowd puts a Burger King crown on Jerry Lawler's head while he's not paying attention. And Jerry Lawler doesn't notice it for a few seconds. And then he looks up and sees what's going on. And he gets pissed. It's like, security, security.
Yeah.
I don't think he actually threw that fan. I think like he was just selling it, but it was, it was hilarious.
It was fun. Perfect. It was fun to watch. But this match with Goldust was 12 minutes and 7 seconds. I usually always put the timestamp in there for you guys. It was what it was. But again, Goldust, bless his heart, he's just kind of a speed bump in the story of Mankind and Undertaker again, you know? Again, like I said, they probably just had this show booked, and they were like, well, you know, we'll just prolong this Mankind story. You know, like we said for last week's episode, we talked about Mankind having something to prove. You know, maybe they, you know, drug out this story line a little bit longer than they intended because of how intense that match was. I don't know. We don't know. No one knows but Vince McMahon, I guess. But, I'm glad that it's going on, the Mankind Undertaker story, because we get some good stuff coming up here in the rest of 1996 and then throughout the rest of their careers together. But, yeah, Goldust, thanks for playing, man. We appreciate it. We're glad you were a pawn in the story. But these two matches y'all have had have not really been the 5-star classics or anything. But
right.
They are what they are. They're more of a storytelling stuff. So.
And the story's going to get very exciting next month. Something very big in store. How this pay-per-view, their segment on it ends, that something big is in store next month. And it is. We're going to cover the Boiler Room Brawl, not next month. We're going to cover it next week right here on the podcast next Friday. So that's one match I've been very, very excited to cover since we started this, was the Boiler Room Brawl for SummerSlam 96. So be sure to watch that before next week's episode. And be sure to let us know what you thought about this match, about this episode. Let us know all your thoughts about Undertaker Goldust International Incident, if you have any thoughts about it. If you remember anything about it, hit us up on Twitter at Talking Taker, on Facebook Talking Taker. My Twitter is at Alex Dorio. You can leave us a comment on iTunes, on YouTube, on Stitcher, on Podomatic, on Google Play. You can subscribe to us. You can leave us a rating on all those things, and we would greatly appreciate all of those things. We love it to hear from our listeners. We love to shout you guys out. We'd love to retweet you. We love to put your comments here on the podcast. So give us all that, and we'll give it all back to you, I guess.
Over on our Twitter page as well, you can take the poll for this week's matchup. Let us know exactly what you thought of Undertaker versus Goldust. Last week's poll result on the King of the Ring 96 match between Mankind and Undertaker, an overwhelming 80% of you gave that match a thumbs up, and only 20% gave it a thumbs in the middle. So everybody was big fans of last week's matchup. It'll be interesting to see what you thought of this week's. And on our Twitter, you can also see our live running tweets and commentary on this past week's Raw 25 episode, including all of our thoughts and many of your thoughts as well on The Undertaker's appearance, that confusing interview segment that we got to see there. We retweeted a lot of your comments about it. And I also dropped my new theory about The Undertaker's involvement with WrestleMania over on our Twitter page. So go check that out.
If you were there in British Columbia, please let us know. You know, let us know your thoughts about the NWO when they formed and, you know, how that changed the business or changed WWF's business. And also, again, getting ready for next week's episode, man. If this, you know, we talked early on in this podcast about how this is the story unfolding of The Undertaker and how long he's lasted. And let's say the first 5 or 6 years was Star Wars A New Hope. Mm. Well, this next chapter is Empire Strikes Back, and it's about to get, boom, about to blow your mind. What's going to happen at the Boiler Room Brawl. Excuse me. So get ready, folks.
I love it. Cool's coming. That's a perfect analogy right there.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, take her easy. Ooh, pale shadow of a woman. Ooh, black.